So we're talking this morning about the big leap that Gay Hendricks refers to as the upper limit problem. And call it the glass ceiling or call it old belief sin. It can't get any better than this. Call it whatever you want to call it, but it's getting to the certain point and then something happening. And if you ever had the experience of having an ordinary miracle of money come into your life, a check from the IRS, what's better than a check from the IRS? There are other things better than that, but that's got to be in the top 10. Or a check from whoever, or a phone call from somebody that you haven't talked to in ages, or just something, some wonderful experience. But consider that bonus at work, or that windfall, quote, end of quote, that ordinary miracle followed very closely by going out and finding that your check engine light is on. Or having a wonderful evening with your beloved, going out to dinner perhaps or staying home and just having a wonderful evening with your beloved, followed immediately by getting into an argument about something that means absolutely not worth a hill of beans. But it's that upper limit problem and that belief that it can't get any better than this. And so, as good as it is, we better do something, not consciously, but we better do something because we can't allow it to get better than this. We can't allow ourselves to be in better physical condition. We can't allow whatever that good is that we say we want, but there's something keeping us from that, jumping to that next level, that glass ceiling or whatever you want to call it. You hear about people, you hear about lottery winners that win. There was that one man that won $300 million, and that's not the first time he won the lottery, and his life just went right down the tubes after winning $300 million because he had some preposterous amount of cash with him that got stolen, and he got arrested for something, and his marriage fell apart in this just whole long list of things. It's that upper limit problem. Even though we might have never said in our lives consciously, it can't get better than this, there is that collective consciousness. Some people call it race consciousness, but that's that belief that's out there. That's that belief that's out there inviting us to adopt it as our own. And sometimes if we're not careful, if we're not consciously aware, there is that belief and it comes home to roost, and somebody that we believe in or somebody that we think knows what they're talking about says it and we say, oh, that must be the truth. Maybe it was our parents or grandparents. Maybe it was our minister. Always a slippery slope, but it was somebody. So often it was somebody that we said, oh, they know what they're talking about, and so their experience must also be my experience. We accepted it as the truth, but it doesn't have to be the truth for us unless it really works for us. This upper limit problem keeps us from experiencing all the wonderfulness of the moment and moving into the next level of even more wonderfulness. Several years ago, we were on a trip on the Big Island of Hawaii, and I remember lying there by the pool at the Hilton at Waikoloa Village with an adult beverage on my poolside table, worrying about something that needed to be done at my job at the time. How ridiculous is that? But that's what happens. We have this wonderful experience, or you go through the flourless chocolate cake with raspberry sauce, and at the end of it, you say, did I really eat that? I don't remember eating that, because we're so thinking about whatever that is. So not only did we lose out on the joy of the taste, we wasted those calories because we didn't enjoy it. What's worse than that? Not much, that's right. So the premise is we follow big leaps, great experiences with big messes, because we don't believe this can be happening or this should be happening. He says the false foundation under the upper limit problem is a set of four hidden barriers based on fear and false belief. They are not true or real, but often we believe them. So we can either look at them and see the truth or continue on the roller coaster of really good followed by really bad. So consider these hidden barriers that he talks about. And these are four hidden barriers that keep us from being completely successful and prosperous. And when I hear the word prosperous, I love Edwin Gaines's definition of prosperity, because it's a package deal. You know, the truth is, if you've got all the money you could possibly spend, but your health is in a mess, then that's not prosperity. If you've got great, perfect health, wonderful things you want to do, and you don't have the money to do it, then that's not prosperity. If you've got perfect health and wonderful money, but your relationships are down the tubes, then that's not prosperity. So it's all about prosperity, this overall experience. And the fourth one I should include is doing what we came here to do. Having the job, whether the job is getting up every morning 9 to 5 and going and getting a paycheck, or doing volunteer work or working with a family or whatever, but having that reason for being here that absolutely feeds your soul. That's the total package and the total experience of prosperity. So the things that four fears and four related false beliefs that hold this upper limit problem in place and keep us from experiencing this total package of prosperity. First of all, starting the belief that something is fundamentally wrong with us. If you come from traditional Christianity or your family did, or someone close to you did, that you've listened to and trusted, there is that theology about original sin. And even if we've never set foot in a church in our lives, it is also in the collective consciousness that somehow, as soon as we're born, we're not enough. And I was talking with my son some time ago, and he is involved in a very, 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 very fundamentalist Christian church. And we were talking about, we had a really light discussion about theology. You know, there are some areas that you just don't go to, and we don't talk politics, obviously, and we don't talk about some things. But we just talked about kind of a real light brush stroke of the foundation of what they believe. And of course, the belief is that we are flawed because of original sin when we get here, and we're working our way back to God. And I said, well, what I know is we never left. The truth is, there's no work to be done. There's no sin to be forgiven. There's no redemption to be done. We are the beloved of God, always has been. There's no such thing as original sin. But if you get that as your belief, then, and you might have inherited it from family or people that you thought knew what they were talking about, then there is that belief that it can only get so good, it can't get any better because I don't deserve it. That's a trap out there that we have to be careful of. I went to California Lutheran College in Thousand Oaks many, many, many years ago for a year, and that ended that for just a variety of reasons. But I remember one night, actually it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and a bunch of us were sitting up talking about the meaning of life and so forth. And one of the questions that came up was, is humankind basically good or basically bad? So if the average Joe or Josephine walking down the street, came upon a wallet with no identification in it and 10 $100 bills, or even if there was identification in it and 10 $100 bills, would the average Joe or Josephine pick it up and go to Bloomingdale's, or pick it up and get on their cell phone and call the person and try and find out who the owner is? Don't have to answer that question. Just something to consider. But the point is, if we believe that we, the collective we, are basically flawed and evil and out for ourselves, then that becomes our experience. And if we're basically evil and flawed, then we don't deserve all the good that Spirit has for us. This is big stuff. This is absolutely big stuff. So if we get something amazing, if we get the most phenomenal relationship we could have imagined, or that huge ordinary miracle of money, or whatever, we can't hold on to it because somehow the universe made a mistake because we don't deserve this. That sounds silly, but it's something to think about. It is absolutely something to think about. The truth is that we're the beloved of God. The truth is, in the New Testament, you remember the words that Jesus said, "Greater than these things will you do, and when you ask, it's given you." Without limit, without restriction, there is nothing in the words of Jesus in the New Testament that limits the good that is ours. And the truth is, there is nothing that limits the good that is ours except our belief about it. We allow ourselves to be told what is the truth. And I visited with several friends over the last week or so, and I found that, and I was reminded that a lot of us run based on what somebody else told us the rules are. And I've said this before, and I'll say this again, you have no less of a connection with the divine wisdom that we call God or Spirit or the universe or our higher power or whatever works for you. You have no less of a connection with that wisdom than I do, or another minister does, or the Pope does. The truth is, the presence of Spirit within you is the same presence of Spirit as in everybody else. We know what we need to know. We know what feels good for us. We know what makes sense for us. And just because it makes sense for somebody else doesn't mean it makes sense for us. It's so important for us to recognize that that wisdom of Spirit is within us, and we always know what to do when we allow ourselves to, because we have that inner wisdom. If it's not bringing us peace, it's not working for us. And we have the opportunity to make those changes, knowing that we're supported by Spirit, and the glass ceiling will rise when we recognize that we're supposed to be whole, complete, and perfect. And I will almost never tell you what you're supposed to do. But we're supposed to experience all the good that Spirit has for us. We're supposed to be at peace. And when we're not, there's something going on. And there's an opportunity to look at it and change it. So the first fear, something's fundamentally wrong with me. The second one is disloyalty and abandonment. Somehow I'm supposed to be doing this because this is the way the family said it was supposed to be. And if you come from a family that's been going along to get along, has had financial challenges, parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, or a history of unemployment and struggle, and money's always been an issue, we can either choose to continue in that same experience or say no. But we've got to do it consciously, because otherwise we just keep going down that road. If you come from a family that has a history of some medical situation, it is so important for us to recognize that we are on our own path and we're not disloyal by saying, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing breast cancer. I'm not doing diabetes. I'm not doing whatever it is. The truth is, we are all on our own path and we don't have to have that experience. I am absolutely convinced. I am absolutely convinced. Disloyalty and abandonment related to our family's expectations of us. Well, now that you're a certain age, you really should be doing thus and so. And the wonderful, amazing people in my life, many of whom are in this room and you know who you are, look at the calendar related to how long they've been in this experience and they recognize that it doesn't matter unless you're a wine or a cheese. It is so important for us to remember that that age has nothing to do with anything. And you keep doing what you want to do and what you choose to do for as long as you can physically do it, because there's no expiration date on the bottom of our foot. I read that in a book someplace and that just so touched me. There is no expiration date on the bottom of our foot. We are just here to come. We are here to do and be and have. And so just keep doing it. And family loves you and family is concerned about you and you might want to think about dot, dot, dot. And that's okay. And we love them and we say thank you, but I'm not doing that because I'm on my own path and I'm not anywhere near done, however old you are. It's important for us to make that decision for ourselves. There's an example in the book of a family that, or a man and woman that wanted to get married. And the family's expectation was the big wedding, the big white wedding with all the trimmings and all the rest of that. And they so didn't want to do that. And if you've ever been in a marriage situation and you just wanted, the family wanted to have the big white wedding and the big stuff, and you just wanted to go off to, you know, call your minister and have him meet you at the church and let's do this and get and have done with it and move on. And sometimes we get caught in that trap, but as much as we love them, it's okay for us to do what we came here to do and what feeds our souls. It's important for us to recognize that. We need to stand in our truth and do or do not do what serves us, despite expectations of someone else. Great chapter in Debbie Ford's book, The Right Questions, talking about, and one of the questions is to the effect, does this feed my soul? Does this serve me? Or am I doing this for somebody else? My father, from about 1950, somehow he bought an international truck back in the day when they made small pickup trucks. But from about 1950 to present day, has driven Fords. Only Fords. There's never been a Troyer in that part of the family that owned anything but a Ford. And in 91 or 2, Jerry and I bought a Chevrolet. And I gotta tell you, there was a little bit of, you know, will he allow it in the driveway? Will I have to change my name to Collins? What will happen? Well, and that's, you know, that's kind of funny. And of course we drove in the driveway and he was very gracious and said, that's a really nice, it was a beautiful car. We love that car. It was a wonderful car. It was a Chevrolet. It's okay. And my father was just fine with it. But how often do we get in our minds, what will happen? What will happen if we disobey the rules? And say, no, I'm not doing that. And while that example's kind of funny, still I invite you to consider, what do we carry with us that, no, I've got to do it this way? From our parents or grandparents, even if they're long gone, even if they've gone on to their experience years ago, what do we keep having as a rule that we accepted as our truth because it was their truth? Just because it was theirs doesn't mean it's ours. That was a great car. We love that car. I don't know if he ever rode in it. Probably not. Well, that's all right. At least he allowed it in the driveway. That's most important. Believing that success brings a bigger burden that we can't handle. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not blank enough to handle that greater whatever it is. The truth is, when we allow ourselves to know, we always know. I always know what to do and say at the moment I need to know it. That's the affirmation that I used over and over as I was getting ready to do my test for my ministerial license. And it works every time, in every moment, no matter what's going on. We always know, because we're never out there by ourselves. We always know what serves us. And we always know what doesn't. You know, God doesn't swoop down from someplace outside of us and say, no, wait a minute, you can't be doing that. But when we allow ourselves to clear out the ego and the fear and the, gee, I better do this so they'll like me stuff, we get that wisdom from within us. And either says, yes, go ahead with that, or why don't you try something different? And sometimes we get little roadblocks. We get little messages. Maybe it's time to do something different. Maybe it's time to do something different. Maybe it's time. It's that divine, you know, that divine 2x4, we call it. The truth is, we are powerful, intelligent, wise beings because of that presence of spirit within us. So when the universe says, here's greater financial abundance than you have ever experienced in your life, we absolutely know what to do with it, and we will do what we need to do with it because we'll be divinely guided. And then fourth, the crime of outshining. We'll look others feel bad. We'll make others feel bad. And I got to say, I had, back in the day when I had my other job and we went on vacation 3 or 4 times a year because I was doing the frequent flyer miles, and we were going here and we were going there. And I started to feel a little guilty because other members of my family weren't going anywhere. And then the still small voice said, but you're not responsible for their abundance. They are. Yeah, we took them to Hawaii with us, but they didn't go to Europe with us, and they didn't go here with us, and they didn't go there with us. And we are generous, loving people, but we also do what serves us in the recognition that we're responsible for our abundance and our experience, and we allow everybody else to be as well. Because that can be a glass ceiling. If the family is not experiencing the same thing you are, that can be a glass ceiling that, oh, I shouldn't do that because other members of my family will feel jealous. And what I've learned is you allow people to feel their own feelings and be the responsible for it. So the book says, the art of getting beyond our upper limit problem has a lot to do with creating space within us to feel and appreciate natural good feelings. Without alcohol, without sugar, without comfort foods and other temporary fixes, it extends our tolerance for things going well in our lives. Consider that word, tolerance. Can we tolerate? I mean, would it be okay if everything went perfectly today? Would it be okay if we went to the grocery store and the clerk was standing there waiting for us? Would it be okay if we went to the bank tomorrow morning and there was no line? Would it be okay if we got a check from the IRS? Because often we're taught that life isn't like that. Life is a struggle. Life is difficult. Life is, you just get out there and claw and scratch, and you got to fight for what you want. And all those beliefs, sometimes if things go so well for so long, we start to look around and say, you know, what's going on around here? We were, several years ago, my son was down and we went clothes shopping down at the outlet malls in San Ysidro. And it was a very busy day. I think it was close to Christmas. And it was a very busy day on a Saturday, and we wanted to go to the Levi store, which is along the main drag. And so we drove in and did our thing about knowing that there's always a parking place. Everything I need is right there when I need it. And so we drove in and drove down, and there's the Levi store and there's the parking place. And then we were done there and we went someplace else, and there was a parking place. And then the third place we went, there's a parking place. And Brandon finally looked at me and said, "What is going on here? How come you keep getting parking places?" I said, "Because that's how it works. That's how it works. That's how life is supposed to be. It's that ease and grace stuff. When it's not, then we need to look and see what's going on in our belief. Course in Miracles says there's no degree of difficulty in miracles. So whether it's a parking place or the ordinary miracle in the mailbox or the perfect healing or whatever it is, there's no degree of difficulty. So the ways we upper limit ourselves, and I love the concept of that, upper limiting ourselves being, it gets really good. You're doing a dinner and the people are there and everything's wonderful and the table's perfect and the salad's there and everything's fabulous, and you get into an argument with somebody or something gets burned or whatever, and it just all goes right down the tubes. That upper limit problem. And some of the ways that we do that to ourselves is worrying about things over which we have no control. You might remember the story, the Jewish mother, but it could be a Lutheran mother or a Catholic mother or an Episcopal mother, sent a telegram to her son and says, "Start worrying, details to follow." Worry is an addiction. When there's nothing to worry about, do we look? I mean, there's got to be something. We can worry about our kids or our grandkids or whatever. I have a dear one in my life that just worries about everything. And I want to say, you're not doing any good for me by worrying for me. If you want to do good for me, know the truth for me. Know that I'm whole, complete, and perfect, and my life is amazingly wonderful. Your worrying for me does me no good. Worrying about something that we can do something about and then doing it is a different deal. But worrying about something over which we have no control accomplishes nothing except keeping the manufacturers of Pepsid and Rolaids and all those other wonderful stomach antacid people in business. And we can choose to absolutely not do that. But how can I be enjoying the wonder, again, of the poolside in Hawaii when I'm worrying about what I'm going to have to do when I get back to work? I can't. So there's that. As good as it is, I'm going to throw water on that fire and start worrying about something. And it takes me right out of the wonderful experience. And by the way, you remember in the Old Testament, Job said, "The thing that I have feared the most has come upon me." Fear, what's worry? Worry is fear that something awful is going to happen. Fear is one of the most powerful emotions that we have, and we know our treatment work is done based on our belief, but also about our feelings and our emotions. So when we do our spiritual mind treatment, our affirmative prayer, and we put the joy and the, we feel what it is we're choosing to experience, and we feel the excitement and the lusciousness and the wonderfulness of it, that gives power to that manifestation of the, of that becoming true for us. In the same way, we give amazing power to that which we don't want to experience when we are fearful about it, because fear is the most powerful emotion, and so that's why Job said that. We upper limit ourselves with criticism and blame. And he suggests we put our, he didn't make this specifically, but I will. Course in Miracles talks about the holy instant. When something happens, you have a holy instant before you open your mouth and respond. Will you respond or will you react? Will you respond in love or perhaps not? Or will you react in kind? Will you look at that and say, you know, for God's sake, and with the budget situations and the government and all the rest of that, it's easy to look at those situations and say, you know, well, they just need to do thus. But the other side of the aisle is going to say, but they just need to do thus. The truth is, it's not an easy answer. It's not an easy answer when they're working through all of this, because everybody's got entitlements, and everybody, well, you can't be cutting that. And okay, we need to build more prisons, but you can't be doing it in my neighborhood. And you got to be cutting that program, but don't be cutting that program. So we step up and hold them in the light. Why in the world anyone in their right mind would run for public office is totally beyond me. And what can we do about it? We can hold them in the light and know that the wisdom that resides within us resides within them. And know that they make the perfect right decisions that are best for everyone. That's all we can do. It feels so much better than the yamma 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 about, well, they should be doing this and so, and they should be doing this and so, and it's so much more creative and creates what we want to experience rather than what we don't. Not speaking the truth and being honest with ourselves is another one of those upper limit problems. And what I know is we need to speak our truth, and we need to live our truth that serves us. It's so important to have that personal, I'm going to go ahead and use this word, that personal integrity. My experience with the word integrity has been oftentimes that someone will tell you that you're out of integrity if you're doing something that they don't want you to do. But the truth is, like we were talking about before, I know what I am led to do. I know what I am called to do, and I know what the wisdom of the universe that resides within me is telling me to do. And I choose to stand in that, and I know what's true for me and not true for me. And if it's not true for somebody else, that's okay. We need to love each other. We need to honor each other. We don't need to always agree with one another. And that's okay. But we need to stand in our own truth. And then the last one that I'll cover this morning is, he uses the word squabbling. And we talked before, you've had a wonderful evening. Just a delightful evening that goes right, it goes south. And Reverend Dr. Wanda Wainman was kind enough to look this up for me. I used this expression a while ago and didn't know where does that expression come from. It comes from the Civil War. And if you're deciding to go south, that means you're going to go fight with the South, which was not a good thing to do. So it was a negative, it had a negative connotation. And of course, we use it to this very day. For something that goes south means it's gone in a direction that we didn't really want it to, with all due respect to my friends in Kentucky and other places like that. Yes, thank you. So squabbling, how often have we had that experience? Jerry and I went to dinner with some friends, and it's been a really long time ago, but dinner was there and it was wonderful and we were enjoying a glass of wine. And they were talking about their experience going up to the wine country, and they had this wonderful Cabernet. No, it was a Merlot. No, I really think it was a Cabernet. No, it was a Merlot. Well, 15 minutes later, almost to the point of fisticuffs over whether it was a Cabernet or a Merlot. Yes, it was red. Thank you. That's all that was necessary. But how often do we get into that? What's important? Is it important that we battle this out and decide what it was? Or do we say it was a great red wine? That's all we need to do. A Course in Miracles says I can have peace instead of this. But when we keep ourselves out of the opportunity for feeling good, and I don't know about you, but my experience has been that righteous indignation is not. You know? You may have every reason and every right in the world to be angry and bitter and resentful and all the rest of that. And that accomplishes what for you? Absolutely, Bubkus, thank you. Absolutely nothing. There's that Pepsid and those antacid people again. It accomplishes nothing for us, and it keeps us out of the good feeling that attracts more good feelings and more good, because we know if you boil this teaching down, what you focus on expands. So if we're focusing on our good and in gratitude for our good, that attracts more good into our lives. If we're focusing on the fact that, well, they were supposed to take the trash out this morning, and I had to walk the dog again. Actually, I didn't, but if we're focusing on that, and just whatever it is, that brings more conflicting things into our experience that may be in a completely different area, but still it keeps us out of that good and that greater good. You may remember, and I'm pleased to tell you that this was before my time, but some of you may remember the Bickersons. Anybody remember the Bickersons? It was a radio show, Donna Meachie and Francis Langford, from 1946 to 1951. It was a radio show, and the premise was this couple that just argued with each other. I guess, and from what I understand, pretty much constantly through the whole show. I guess that's entertainment, I don't know. But anyway, I had heard about them and went on the internet yesterday. And of course, you can find absolutely everything that you'd ever want to on the internet. But interesting. But just do we throw water on the fire of good and wonderful and peaceful experience by coming up with something to argue about? Or does the opportunity come up and we say, because the truth is, you have to pick your battles. There are things to get really upset about. And there are things to say, I love you. And my peace isn't worth giving up for this. When we make that choice, we move forward in this feeling of goodness. And this feeling of well-being, we're doing Asking It Is Given You, the Abraham Hicks book, Thursday nights in my class. And she talks about this feeling of well-being. It is the over, it's the overall experience that all is well. Even when there's stuff going on, even when there's loss, even when there's conflict, the bottom line is that all is well. And what happens is when we focus on that and recognize that, we get more of that, and that glass ceiling starts to lift higher and higher, and we allow that good and more of that good to flow in. And that's what we're about, is experiencing all that life has for us. The truth is, that's what we're about. So, with that in mind, let's move into the light. And light bearers, if you'd like to join me as well. So in this moment, we're reminded of our oneness with the God presence with one another and with all of life. And we're reminded that we are the beloved of God. The Course in Miracles reminds us that God Himself would be incomplete without me and without you. And so we recognize that we're an integral part of this loving, nurturing presence that we call God, Spirit, the universe, our higher power. And because of that, all the good that there is there for us, and it's our choice. And so today, we choose to look for the good and praise it, to look for opportunities to be grateful, to look for the joy and the wonder and the lusciousness of our moment-by-moment experience, and allow the greater peace, the greater abundance, the greater health, all the good that there is for us to be our experience now. We allow it to be. That's all we need to do, is allow it to be, and it is. We give great thanks this morning for this wonderful place we call Joyful Living Church, for the opportunity to come together as a spiritual community. So for our time, for our love, for this opportunity, we give great thanks. And together we say, and so it is.